Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 156 for May 27th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Anger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp with the top story, Xbox One reveal. Xbox One. No, really, actually, no. I won't gloat. I won't go into it too much because E3 will have more information. But there is actually some neat things about the new Xbox that you will be able to do as a blind person, like talk to it and make it switch channels and start Skype conversation with your friends and stuff. But that's still a couple of months off, and Joe will be calm until E3, and then Joe will go off on the Xbox again. But stay tuned. It's going to be really, really awesome.
And I will not laugh at Microsoft's seeming inability to count. We go from the 360 to the one. I'm wondering what comes next. Are they going to make it a two, even though it's not the second Xbox, or do they keep counting backwards and it's the zero?
No, that was called the original Xbox. So you're totally confused. That was not Xbox One. That was Xbox Beta. And then came the 360, and then...
And now is the one. And then it's going to be the new Xbox.
Well, that's better than new iPad.
Ooh. Yeah, I think they'll just take a page out of Apple's book and call them the new Xbox.
Xbox. Somebody will, or somebody has on Twitter, I'm quite sure.
Down with version numbers, I say. Just do away with them.
It causes confusion, like the PlayStation 4. What could that possibly mean? Well, actually, you know what? The head of Nintendo did say that they were confused people with the Wii U, that people thought the Wii U was a peripheral to the Wii. So there is actually something to that with names and branding, like the Galaxy S4.
But yeah, that Consumer Reports is all kind of excited about and says it's the top smartphone right now. Pretty big deal.
I had to laugh, though, because they detracted points for portability. That just cracked me up. You know, this thing is big, I guess, and maybe Consumer Reports wanted something smaller. Also, points detracted for poor voice quality, and they said that's a common thing to happen with all of these cell phone reviews. So the thing that you're supposed to make calls with rarely gets high marks for, you know, doing that.
And the irony to me is that the S4 is actually smaller technically than the S3 because they made the bezel thinner. So it actually, if you put one on top of the other, even though the S4 has a bigger screen, it actually ends up being a bit smaller because of the plastic bezel around the phone is easier to hold. 10 million sold already, reports Samsung. So in the first month, that's done already well. Remember, when you go to compare numbers, if you're kind of a numbers junkie, you have to also think that they sell a lot of other Samsung phones, be the S3, the Note 2, the Captivate, or about four or five others. So when you keep, you know, for those who want to play, you know, my team versus your team, you know, you take the iPhone 4, 4S, and 5, tally those all up, and then you put them against the 35 phones that Samsung makes, not just for Android, but, you know, Windows Phone and just about every other platform on the planet.
Well, Samsung sells a lot, but what about the HTC? Is the HTC going to really just take over here, or maybe not?
5 million sold, and the rumor is it's already discontinued, folks. That's right. It lasted longer than the Kin. Well, no, maybe. That's actually something that Ricky and I were talking about offline.
Yeah, I think the Kin did last longer.
Yeah, maybe, what was it, 42 days or something like that? It was.
I want to say the Kin was 73 days. Maybe I'm wrong, though.
It's about right. The ad started so much sooner than when the product came out, which is funny. Circles. Wonder where Google got circles from. The Kin? No, anyway. The HTC seems to be bleeding. They were pretty much kicked to the ground and were crying for help. After that, much ballyhooed Facebook for Android, and that Facebook would come preloaded on the first, which not the first as in the date, as in the HTC first.
Right.
It's really a shame, though, because there was like speakers on the front of this phone, and the reviews were not horrible about it, you know, because it wasn't a plastic phone. So some people liked that it felt more like a real phone than a toy, and that the sound was kind of good out of it. But I have been not an HTC fan for many, many, many a year, so I'm not surprised here that things seem to be really coming apart at the seams with HTC losing, you know, some of their development team, some of their people that were kind of sort of backing them. And in a related story, Samsung bought 10% of Pantech last week. And anybody who's ever looked at the El Cheapo phones like the Kyoceras or Pantechs,
the Pantech that's really Duo, I remember that phone.
Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a major contraction going on in the cell phone market. And then Nokia reported really good sales, well, good enough sales of the Windows Phone Nokia line. As we jokingly said last week, Windows Phone 8 has become the number three platform going past BlackBerry.
Yeah, but BlackBerry is trying to make themselves more relevant, and they might be able to pull this off. I don't, you would not have heard me say this last year. I mean, we had a RIM Death Watch just about every week on this show.
Right.
And BlackBerry is by no means out of trouble, but they still do have some diehard fans. They had their conference.
Canada.
Yeah. Well,
mostly
you know,
Canada. Support thy countrymen.
We love these boys. You know, they're homeboys, and we got to support
all
these,
hail
these
the
homegrown
Maple
heroes. But they had their conference this past week, and people were talking about how it was such a difference from last year, because last year they kind of had to come in and hang their heads in shame. No, we don't have a new OS yet. No, we don't have a new phone yet, but we're really trying and stuff. And this time they had a lot to talk about. They do have new phones. They're looking at making a cheaper phone as well. I don't know if it's going to be QWERTY or touchscreen, but they have also just opened up BlackBerry Messaging, which used to be this super secret elite thing that you could only have on BlackBerry. And we talked recently about how they're doing cross-platform stuff where they're bringing portions of their enterprise tools to other platforms. And they're just, they realize they've got a ways to go in terms of marketing. And they even admitted, you know, Apple and Samsung make it very hard for any other messages to be heard in this market right now, but we're not giving up.
There's a lot of money. Samsung spends a certain amount of their budget for advertising out of sales. So if Samsung's sales are up, then their advertising is up, which is very different than the way that Apple approaches it. And then this week, Microsoft launched some really heavy-duty smack-in-your-face ads to Apple, where they had Siri say things like, I'm sorry, I can't do that, or I'm not able to search for that. And visually, it was like side-by-side comparisons, and they were really promoting Windows Phone 8. They were really promoting Surface and how Surface is different, and saying having Siri say things like, I can't do PowerPoints and things like that, but I can do chopsticks. And so you see an iPad mini come up and somebody's playing chopsticks on it, like the Heart and Soul commercials from Christmas. So like I said a couple of months ago, several manufacturers think that Apple is in a position where they can attack them now or that they're vulnerable. Certainly that'll change at WWDC, but for the moment, there's a lull because everything's so delayed at Apple that everybody's going to take a shot because they think it's safe.
And we retweeted on Twitter this morning that June 10th looks like the date. We're going to find out what's going on with Apple.
I hear it's flat, black and white.
Black and white and flat all over.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be great for those of us who like high contrast. Wonderful show here on the Sarah Talk Podcast Network.
Yes.
See how I did that there? Yeah.
I hadn't stopped and processed that, actually. I was just thinking
all hail Tom Merritt.
Maybe VoiceOver might, you know, I mean, not that I have any real complaints about apps. Most of the apps I want are pretty accessible, but there's always room for improvement. So I'm not sure if this moving away from shiny stuff will help us or not. So,
But is your forecast cloudy, Jamie?
Well, you know, it is actually, and especially Dropbox cloudy. If you look at the a comparison of the leading storage options, rather Dropbox and Google Drive and Amazon and all that good stuff, Dropbox is still the fastest, according to this article that we have here, which makes me happy because I don't use any of the rest of them really much to speak of. So,
poor SkyDrive is pretty much not in the running.
No.
SkyDrive exists. That's all we say about it.
For the desktop, and you can have SkyDrive on your Xbox, and you can have... hi, hello?
Yeah, except sometimes apparently the files don't sync at all with SkyDrive, and that's kind of bad. On this list, there was Dropbox, there was Google Drive, and Amazon Cloud Storage and SkyDrive, in case you're wondering. And the results went Dropbox, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft bringing up the rear there.
Irony of ironies, there was an update to Google Drive the day this article came out. So it's like...
Maybe they made it faster.
Yeah.
Possibly. It was like, you know, asterisk right next to this line right here.
Yep. So if you're going to talk about backing up storage and all that good stuff, you probably need to do it in 140 characters or less if you're a teenager, Joe. What do you think about that
possibility? True, so true. There was a couple of weird articles this past week. What do teenage girls do on their iPhone, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Talking about the social media aspects and that, you know, teenagers text to their friends in the same room. But what they're not doing is they're not necessarily running away from Facebook in droves. There were several articles. One said one day teens don't like Facebook and they're leaving it for Twitter. And then there was another article the next day that said 91% of teens are on Facebook. And the thing that they didn't say was, were they active on Facebook? Doesn't mean that they, you know, I have an account on Facebook. Okay, great. Do you actively do anything with it? Nah.
What I had to laugh about was that one of these articles, the one that says that teens are moving away from Facebook and onto Twitter. Well, we're going to Twitter because there's so much less drama there. I was thinking,
apparently they don't follow anybody in the blind community.
No.
Blind drama rules Twitter. I'm just saying.
That just made me laugh.
Not picking on young people, but no drama. If there's no drama on, I mean, it's gonna shift and drift wherever they happen to be, because that's just kind of one of those things that seems to happen.
Yeah, if there's no drama on Twitter, that means Twitter is down. So, you know,
there's something wrong, right. or everybody's on vacation and didn't charge their phones. Something happened. Audio boo fell over.
Basically, my drama is okay. It's yours that's annoying.
Yeah, good. Mine is really interesting.
That.
Yes,
I am so glad we established that. It's important to set up these boundaries.
Yes.
Well, Yahoo and Tumblr are hoping to avoid some drama. We have an article here about the purchase of Tumblr by Yahoo, and Tumblr is basically saying, "No, nothing's going to get screwed up. We promise everything's going to be just fine. We are."
Marissa told us she'd leave us alone. No one's going to do anything to us. We're totally cool like that.
We're still maintaining all our staff and all our departments and, you know, our mission statement and all that stuff. Nothing's changing. We just
don't look at this article that said 72,000 blogs switched over to WordPress in an hour after it was made official that we were bought. No, don't look at that.
Wow, that's bad. No, that just means they were just... They were going to switch anyway right then.
Yeah, they were totally thinking about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is coincidence, really. They all...
Yes, exactly. Where's the export feature? The export feature!
Well, we shall see how this all turns out.
So, if you are... And that's funny because I just saw a tweet from Laura Legendary saying, please don't start a sentence with so.
Hilarious. I do it all the time.
I do. Good
I
Lord.
Saw it this morning
I'm
too,
the one
and
who
I was like,
that
"Oh
habit
man!"
To this podcast, I am the worst offender of this. So Jamie,
yeah.
So if we look at things like that, so if I was like traveling somewhere,
yeah,
and I wanted to connect and write a tweet with so in it,
uh-huh.
I could do it through Foursquare?
So, like, you could. Well, the deal is if you found Wi-Fi, but you weren't quite sure what the password was, you might actually be able to locate said password on Foursquare in the comments section. I laughed when I read this because I never even considered such a possibility.
No, I never thought about it either.
But yeah, because I don't check into nothing other than
– make Foursquare useful by reading the comments.
We noticed that all these people were starting to migrate elsewhere and do other check-ins. So we wanted to actually give you a feature that was helpful for a change. Well, actually, the Groupon deal type thing was neat in that if you checked in somewhere, you got kind of a – if you buy a dozen donuts, get a dozen, yeah, you know, donut hole free kind of thing.
Yeah, but they always had it where if you pay with an American Express card, you can get $5 right off or something. And it was always something – I saw them everywhere, and they were never things that I could actually do. Okay, you better check into four more restaurants like this, and then mm-hmm. you'll get a free appetizer at one of them. Or, you know, here's $5 off.
Get 3,000 more frequent flyer miles to New Jersey.
Woo! Yay. It turns out, though, in the comments, people were listing a couple of other apps that you could do this with, and a couple of them you do have to have a Foursquare account, and some of them you don't. There were apps for both iPhone and Android, so when you check out this article, look at the first few comments. I can't believe it. This is the second time I've ever recommended looking at the comments. Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting.
That is very strange.
You will find actually useful information there this time. So, yay.
There was a huge conversation about 2 weeks back on MacBreak Weekly. Renee Ritchie from iMore was saying that people are trying to figure out how to do identity, because if they could nail identity, it's a $1 trillion business in how you would, you know, say, I am me and I wish to purchase brand X from location Y. And so if there's one way for you to establish that you are truly you and that you have a method of payment and the merchant can establish, well, I'm a credible, suitable merchant and I can accept said payment, that would make things very frictionless. And this was in relationship to the idea that maybe not iPhone 5 or 5S or 6, but maybe possibly iPhone 7 would have a fingerprint scanner, because one of the largest fingerprint companies that makes that kind of thing possible was bought by Apple a year ago for like $360 million. So imagine that opening up then to an API to say something like Foursquare, and you could do that kind of stuff a lot quicker or a lot easier, or maybe even through Passbook, although it remains to be seen because Apple tends to be leaning towards companies like Twitter and others to do kind of the social aspect, because Ping worked out so well.
Yeah.
But that's still a couple of years off, it seems, although Square is definitely trying to beat them to the punch and hooking up with people like Foursquare to kind of allow you to know those check-ins, but then use Square for payment. So that's changing all the time.
Well, that would be awesome, but what happens when this kind of thing breaks? You know, you're trying to make a payment, or you think that you deserve this reward because you've checked into five places and it doesn't happen. Then you got to go through tech support and call the customer service line and try to get your point across to some automated robot thingy, and they never understand what you're talking about.
We should employ a brain like, oh, I don't know, IBM's Watson. I mean,
yeah.
Winner of the Jeopardy challenge, went off to cure cancer and is now here to save you from IVR on phones. That's right. Watson has put his mind – wait a minute. I just personalized the computer. Watson has put its mind, as it were, to solving the problem with customer service and making things a lot easier. And ironically, if you look what's happening in Google search with a conversational search engine, that probably is not off the mark that one of these days we'll have bots that can do this. I mean, remember years ago there was like 4 or 5 years ago – there was a rash of IRC bots and other bots that would have a physical conversation with you in a relationship kind of way, and it would look for keywords that you would say and then give canned responses back to you.
Yeah, they kind of built it off Eliza or whatever and tried to make it all realistic.
Yeah, so it's not too far off the mark that this would happen. This would also fall in line with somebody had a startup for facial recognition software in retail stores. So that scene in Minority Report where Tom Cruise walks in with somebody else's retinas and they start projecting ads to him based off the recognition that he was this character and had bought all this other stuff before. That seems to be on its way too. Imagine the store, you do the check-in, you walk into Best Buy, and Best Buy knows that you like Apple peripherals, and so you start getting ads about what Apple peripherals are on sale today as you walk in because it recognized you physically.
I don't know why this just happened, Joe, but as you were talking, into my mind literally popped a bot here and a bot there, here a bot there.
Bot there, bot everywhere, bot.
I'm sorry, it did.
Old McDonald's
had a bot.
Would you like some fries?
Oh dear.
It's the middle point of the year, ladies and gentlemen, and just yes. Letting you know we're a little punch drunk. Just saying,
Yes, we are.
Well, coming up after the break, we have Pandora on the ropes. Maybe, possibly, we'll see. Would you like to feel your baby? No? Huh? Well, wait. I'll explain more in a bit. And also, echolocation. It's not just for bats and dolphins anymore. All that and more, plus your comments in the mailbag right here on Star Talk 156 after the break.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the accessibility anywhere people.
Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 156. And oh, my hope springs eternal, doesn't it, Pandora? They really don't want to be seen as irrelevant these days. And they have a couple of little issues going on, with Pandora. But if you are a Pandora listener, whether you have a free subscription or paid subscription, there's a pretty cool new channel called Pandora Premieres, which will actually stream albums pre-release. So the album is not available for purchase yet, but on this channel, they will be streaming these albums for people to check out before they're available. And you can actually
rip.
Listen to what?
Rip.
Yeah, you probably could.
Probably get them before purchase. Yep. Yeah. But get them before anywhere else.
I thought it was funny. Speaking of reading comments, someone had written, "I don't like it because you can't thumb down a song." And someone else wrote in and said, "Dude, it's for an album that hasn't been released yet, so it's going to be on the album whether you like it or not. There's no point in thumbing it down."
You can, though, apparently listen to different songs on the album as many times as you want, so you can do something. I don't know quite how this works, so it must look a little different than a typical Pandora channel, but you can, play that again, and choose the songs from the album that you want to hear.
I like that because it promotes albums over singles, because I am, of course, an old style, raised in the radio by burnt out hippies kind of guy, and I'm used to albums. I love concept albums or albums that have tracks that overlay into each other and stuff like that, and the fact that we've kind of gone back in time to the days of buying a 45 at the record store by just going with singles is kind of depressing to me, that I've run into people and go, "Yeah, I only really bought that one single because the rest of the stuff on the album is really kind of bad." And it's like, that does happen. I do get that. But I love the idea that albums are still – I even supported, good grief help me, Apple's long play. Remember when Apple did the LP for a while with extra liner notes and all of that?
Yeah.
It died the same day as Ping, I think. But – I love that idea. I love the concept. And Steve Jobs really did explain that very well in that, you know, when he was growing up, he really enjoyed having album sides. And they tried to bring back that experience. And sadly, it didn't have any traction.
Well, talking about bringing up things, Apple's had some businesses they started about 30 years ago, subsidiary companies in Ireland, as I understand it, to kind of maybe help with some tax issues. Alina Roberts talked about this on Triple Click Home, which you'll hear shortly, and she was listening to NPR. Apparently, this is all quite legal from what – boy,
they're
really
not the only ones who do this. Google also uses Ireland.
Yeah. So Congress is grilling Apple about not paying enough taxes.
And Tim Cook's like, nuh-uh, we pay every cent we owe. And he says we're – you know, we're sticking to the letter of the law as well as the spirit of the law. He's basically saying we're not doing anything wrong. And I think they haven't done anything illegal at all.
Right.
And even Cook says we really should have a tax overhaul, which might even ensure that Apple pays more taxes than it does now. But because of the really complex corporate tax code in America, it is possible and legal and not even a big deal, really, for companies to do this kind of thing perfectly legally without even trying, you know, without saying, okay, we're going to donate to some bogus charity or whatever so that we can get a tax write-off. You know, they're not doing that kind of
thing.
Let me get this straight. You called me to Congress to beat me up on something that you guys passed a long time ago.
Yeah.
For your needs. And now because all of us are doing it and started the whole outsourcing trend, now we're in trouble. No, did I remind you that we actually are putting jobs in Texas and building Macs like we were asked to? Good grief. What do you want us to do? My favorite part of this, by the way, is the headline that came out with John McCain asking Tim Cook why he has to update his iPhone so
that's
much.
That's great.
That is one of my all-time
anymore.
Favorite stories, period, in technology. That is...
It just takes so much time.
Just do what my wife does and don't bother with it.
There you go.
There's a way to...
Honey, you have 47 updates, dear. Can I help you with this, please? Let me have your phone for a minute.
I absolutely love that nothing says that Congress is more out of step with technology than why do I have to update my iPhone so much? That is gorgeous.
That's just awesome.
It's going to be my number one story of the year in AT. I'm just telling you right now, this year in AT, I may have actually found my one-year story. This is awesome.
Thank you, John McCain.
I'm going to frame that and then use it as a dartboard.
But yeah, they are. Apple is bringing some labor and jobs and you know, some supply chain inside the U.S.,
it's a good time to be in Texas. I'm telling
you,
between Google
Fiber
over there and all these Mac jobs and Mark Zuckerberg building a gigantic thing over there for Facebook and all those UT grads becoming interns. Oh my gosh, it's a good time.
Oh yeah. Austin is an interesting place right about now because they're talking about building an Apple campus there as well as building Macs in Texas, and they'll probably be big Macs if I were going to guess.
AMD and Dell used to be.
Yeah.
And actually, Austin's always been kind of unique. When I first moved there years ago, it was one of the strangest things to pull up to a red light and have this VW microbus painted like the Partridge Family with old money going to Hippie Hollow. And then on the right side was new money video game extraordinaire hot guy with an Alfa Romeo that had been like imported. And it was just strange. There is a reason why it says keep Austin weird. It and what is it? Keep Georgetown sane, I think. What is it?
Something like that.
Yeah. And with downloading becoming so popular because, you know, also when you're riding on buses in Austin, you hear buses talk and you have a lot of time to kill. That's when I was testing Victor Reader streams, actually, when I worked for DARS, was I'd play with the new Victor Reader stream updates while I was listening to bosses say, hi, 1M, metric, via Runberg, you know, and things like that. Or as I used to joke, 1M, metric, south, via third circle of hell. And so anyway, I've just made everybody in South Austin mad, but there was a reason I lived in the north. Anyway. The new Victor Reader Stream is finally available. And finally, with that Audible update we've heard so much about, and that's kind of good. It's I know a lot of people were kind of holding off on the new Victor until this was really out there and really available. We have an article here that explains some of the details and what you're going to get when you get said update.
Yeah, kudos to Audible and Humanware for making that happen. And to the community for speaking up and saying, hey, we really kind of need this.
Absolutely.
And you might not only download books to your stream, but you might actually play a little music on there, like some Stevie Wonder, who is about to release 3 albums after 8 years of taking a break. That's pretty impressive.
Wow, he's been busy.
He has, man. He's been putting some stuff in the studio, at least, anyway. And really kind of wants to help and encourage China, which is taking a day to honor accessibility, if I have that straight. That's also rather impressive. I think he would like to perform there. Just kind of encourages. Yeah, just kind of encourages people with disabilities to, you know, hang in there and keep working together. And let's all be one and be friends and get along. That's not asking much, is it? I don't think.
Through the power of music. I mean, remember in the 80s, there were bands that were thrilled to go play in Russia.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, you remember the Moscow Music Peace Festival, Joe?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That was very cool. I remember listening to that on, it was being broadcast via satellite on some place or other. And they brought all those bands playing to us live. It was very cool.
Well, in the 80s, we had all of those, you know, the number one record of 1984 that beat out Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Relax was We Are the World Band-Aid kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, and in fact, Stevie Wonder performed on that song. Mm-hmm. So, you know, power of music.
He's speaking from experience. Exactly.
Yes.
We mentioned a couple of months ago that J-Tools was going to be available again soon, and it's going to be available for free. That has now happened. As Technologies is releasing J-Tools for free, it's available for download. There's a lot of stuff that you can do with this product, including some pretty advanced clipboard features. You can post things to Twitter. You can use this along with Dragon Naturally Speaking if you have that installed. But if you don't, no big deal, because there are lots of features here. And this was a paid product for a while. It is free now, partly because there are some things in the original that just couldn't be brought to all of the various versions of JAWS. And partly it's used as sort of an advertisement for Aztec to say, hey, this is the kind of scripting work we can do. And if you like what you see here and you need some JAWS scripting, you know, give us a shout and we'll help you out.
It's funny when you said free and I was talking 1984 music and I mentioned Band-Aid, all I would hear is free the world, you know, feed the world. sorry.
Yep.
it's just terrible the way my mind works. And then I went off to Nile Rodgers and Free, and then it just spun off into something very terrible. And it was it's a mashup, I'm sure, is already on
YouTube. As long as nobody transitions that into Free Bird, we're all right.
Ooh, Free Bird's burritos. I need to go up and see Dr. Robert Carter in College Station and eat burritos. Oh, see, this is how my mind works. It's very,
it's
very
a scary
terrible.
Place in there.
I'm telling you. There is a wonderful article coming out that's called Before the Black. No, I'm not going to quote any Metallica lyrics. So sorry. Sorry, Wayne Merritt. But the article here talks about what things that you can do to prepare or what it's like for the journey before you have impending blindness. Certainly as someone who has low vision and I have glaucoma, you think about this on occasion. And I've worked with others who lost their sight, especially later in life, who had retinitis pigmentosa later in life and other eye conditions. And to hear stories or to hear fears or to alleviate those fears that it's not the end of the world when you lose your vision or the journey into darkness, it's a very, very interesting article. It's always something that I don't relish doing, but I do like that I can help others kind of, you know, kind of adjust to the idea of moving from, you know, visual to non-visual. And I myself have had that issue. In fact, I was 29 when I finally probably accepted my blindness. And that was a very tough time. So as any partial can tell you, there comes a moment where you just bang your head into one more wall and say, you know what, that cane thing ain't a bad idea. It's been around for a couple hundred years. And I guess I should really start to pay attention to that because, you know, walls hurt. And I'm just saying. But this article gives you an account of that and some ideas. And if you know someone or if you yourself are having this kind of condition and you're interested on how to get some ideas about adjustment, I would read this article. And I would also listen to High Contrast. Go back a couple of episodes. Maury Hill did a great conversation about this on the episode Recalculate, where she talked about her stem cell trials and what she's been doing as she's gone to a higher magnification. We call it a higher X magnification. So going from 4X to 6X to 8X. There's a little bit of a change in how you perceive yourself and how you perceive the world. So definitely go back to High Contrast because she was very brave and talked about her own journey there. In fact, the moment that she gave up the car, and that's the real big one for someone who is 50 and above, because it's not just giving up mobility, but it's also giving up the personification because some people identify themselves through their cars. And so they're not only just giving up the fact that they have to rely on others or that they can't go out themselves, they're giving up a part of how they perceive themselves in the vehicle that they drive.
There's one thing in this article that really struck me, and I've always been totally blind, so I never lived this, but there was one message here that I don't hear often enough, I think. And it was that as you're losing your sight, you can kind of have two perspectives from the people around you or even from yourself, where you say, okay, this is happening. I got to get over it and move on. Or there's the kind of pity of, you know, nothing's ever going to be the same again. And bless your heart, you poor dear. And this article really said in a way that I haven't quite heard it put this way before, but it is okay to grieve that you are losing something that you had before. And it's okay to rely, you know, to some extent on what you still have. Just make sure that you're not relying solely on that. But I liked that it pointed out, yeah, you have permission to be upset about this as long as that doesn't impact your ability to continue doing what you need to do, because it is a loss.
And you have to accept it with your friends and family. They're going to go through the transition with you. And
right.
You know, sometimes there's that awkwardness of, oh, did you see the game last? Oh, I shouldn't say see. Oh, wait. Did you hear the game last? No, just refer to it like you always refer to it, you know? Just don't even think about it. There are moments that I treasure with my friends in that they totally forget that I'm visually impaired. And, you know, in those moments, they don't even think about it. In fact, when I was in retail, I actually used to play this up. We were opening Incredible Universe in Houston, and I played a joke on somebody, and I went to the very front of the store and said, oh my God, I just got a call. I've got to go to the hospital. I don't have my car today. Can I borrow your keys? You know I'm good for it. Just look, I got to go. And this friend of mine actually had the keys in my hand before he stopped for 2 seconds and went, wait a second. And, you know, because I did the whole thing, dude, I'll put it, look, here's a 20. I'm going to put it in the tank. I promise. And, you know, the whole nine yards. And he just had totally forgotten about it. And it was such a pressure thing. And I'm doing social hacking right there and on the floor just to – and I told other people, I said, let's see how far he gets before I you know, he realizes. So, I mean, those are really great moments in that, you know, we have to think about what it's like, not just for ourselves, because certainly it is sometimes an audience of one, but we also have to think about those that are around us that we care about, because those people as well – will have some of a grieving process or an adjustment process along with you.
Well, moving on to some other AT news this week. We have a resource here for using Google Docs with 4 different screen readers, JAWS, ChromeVox, VoiceOver, and NVDA. Of the 3 screen readers that I'm familiar with, ChromeVox being the one I'm not so familiar with, it looks to me like NVDA would be the easiest to use Google Docs with. You don't have to jump through maybe quite as many hoops with VoiceOver. You really need to use the Chrome browser with JAWS. There are actually several steps you got to go through. Disable Forms mode completely for all pages and several other things. Then in NVDA, it looks like kind of maybe just works a little better with this. But this resource looks to be fairly extensive as far as giving some good explanation. Now, whether it really works or not, I don't know. I haven't played with it to see once you've gone through all these steps if you can actually use Google Docs, but it's worth taking a look and having a play with it. And I just may do that someday. Who knows?
Yeah, I take a dive into this every couple of months, and then I emerge crying and bang my head against
screaming.
The wall and promise never to do it again.
Yep.
And then
several
I do.
Several coffee cups have been broken in this process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it is true. But I think NVDA has always been the easiest to use that I'm aware of. Now, ChromeVox obviously has some advantages because it is, you know, made by Google, and I haven't played with ChromeVox in quite some time, so I don't remember what the experience is like, but it's certainly worth checking out, as is the newly released version 2013.1 of NVDA, which brings some enhanced Braille support, support for PowerPoint, and there is a somewhat modified laptop layout in this version. So lots of great stuff there for those of you who use NVDA.
And keeping with the 80s tone, you'll be dancing in the streets with NVDA's update, as well as Dancing Dots' update. That's right. The new version of Dancing Dots is now available. We have some resources here listed to be able to find out more about this, as well as you can zoom on back to our convention coverage from CSUN. Ricky, you had a chance to talk to our friends over at Dancing Dots.
I did. I had a pretty lengthy interview with Bill McCann, who talked about what Dancing Dots is all about and the various and sundry ways that you can both read and create music using tools developed by Dancing Dots. Hope to catch up with those guys again at the upcoming NFB and ACB conventions, where we will, of course, be interviewing people on the floor to talk about their latest and greatest products and services.
And, you know, we have had a wonderful opportunity to talk to all sorts of individuals at these conventions, and some have actually taken up the opportunity to jump in and advertise with the Saratalk Podcast Network.
It's a good place to be, isn't it? I mean, all sorts of listeners checking out the content and here to learn about assistive technology and other services that maybe don't have to do with assistive technology. People kind of come to learn about what's out there. And if you advertise on SPN, you're going to reach lots of people that may just be interested in what you've got to sell.
Most podcasts cover just a couple of areas. You know, they focus in on one or two things. When you consider the depth and the breadth of content that the Saratalk Podcast Network covers, we talk about everything from mainstream news to assistive technology news, to more specifically Android, Apple, Google.
Books, movies,
absolutely.
What's going on in the community.
Pop culture, yeah.
So many things.
Not only that, being that we are 95% blind at this company and have a blind gentleman at the helm, we understand what it's like to be a blind entrepreneur and how it is sometimes difficult to get your message out there to other individuals. Where can you go that's going to give you a really large megaphone to say, my service, my application, my program, my training facility, my ability to get out to as many people as possible? Where could I possibly do that?
How about right here? What do you say?
Absolutely.
$50 maybe? Yeah.
Uh-huh. So as a blind or low vision individual who runs their own business, $50 for a spot on this very program or some of our other programs, or $250 to have a spot run on all six of our currently running series, you'll have an opportunity to reach over 16,000 listeners a month, and that is no small feat whatsoever. And if you're not sure how to write a spot or produce a spot, or you don't already have one done, we've been doing this kind of stuff for 5 years almost. Saratalk will celebrate its 5th anniversary in November. And we know all about writing copy, producing copy, marketing copy, and also how to actually kind of sort of get out there social media wise. So if you need some assistance in that, we can help you with that as well.
If you want to learn more or you're ready right now, give us a call, 612-246-4818. You can also send us an email, info@serotech.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And you can learn a lot more about SPN by going to serotech.com/SPN. That's serotech.com/SPN.
Coming up after the break, your mailbag, opening a locker with a robot, and that baby story we promised right here on Serotalk 156.
I started going cold turkey. Well, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it from myself, so I won't be tempted.
I used to do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple. I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 156. It's time to rip open the mail bag. Ricky, dig your hands in there and see what you come up with.
Attack of the Eye reports.
Wow, there's all sorts of sparkly, fun, magical stuff in here. A lot of
it's
people
a world
wanted
of dreams.
To talk about. Yes, it is. A lot of people wanted to talk about Disney and love the comments that we've gotten so far. And of course, if you have more comments, we'll talk a little more later about how to send those in. For right now, though, let's get started with an eye report from Jan Brown.
Hey, this is my first eye report. I'm Jan Brown, SAMNET member. Went to Disneyland, not World, but it's the same policy in the 90s, only I was able to avoid it because I was with a bunch of therapists and we went as a herd, and so I got to stand in line with everybody else. It was a thrill, if you like that kind of thing. But I'm glad I did it because I didn't want to be a poor deer, as my mother used to call them. So this is the poor deer, not goodbye.
Oh, you poor deer. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate that. And you get extra points for mentioning that you're a SAMNET user, by the way. This really kind of captures how I feel about this. You know, I don't want to be that kind of pitied person. Oh, you poor dear. Here, come on over here.
Come
we'll
on.
Take you out of line.
Absolutely. Braveheart. Oh, Braveheart.
Oh, yes. There you go.
Oh, there. See, there's that voice I knew from EOL and Back to the Future. That was we worked on
yeah,
that one a long time.
Right.
That voice right there. There they are, Marty. They're there. But she's right. Nobody wants to you know, have the pity party right there at the happiest place on earth. So, no, I totally get what you're going for there. As I've gotten older, I don't really care, and I like the idea that I can get through the park faster. So that was the lazy thinking of only Joe moment I had there.
You know, I think that Eric Troop agrees with you. Let's check out his eye report.
Hey, everybody. This is Blind Geek, a.k.a. Eric Troop of the Maccessibility Roundtable podcast. And this is regarding Serotech Podcast 155, the Disneyland story. And it's kind of funny that this would be brought up on this podcast because we of Maccessibility got into this discussion completely unrelated to this story because we hadn't really read the story, at least not to my knowledge, in our post-podcast discussion. And my take on it is thus. We, as blind people, spend 90% of our time or our lives adapting to the sighted world, whether it be through technology or through learning how to do various things in a socially acceptable manner, what have you. If they want to adapt to us once in a while by giving us services such as these that Disneyland provides or boarding us on a plane first at the airport, I have absolutely no problem with that. I guess I can see Ricky's point about the impact it has on people who see us in the public eye doing getting these treatments and whatnot, but I honestly don't have any reason to think it makes that big a difference.
Thanks, Eric. And it is interesting that this came up during your podcasting sessions with Mixcessibility as well. I don't think it made it into the podcast itself, but, you know, just having this come up in kind of the post-game show or pre-game show or whatever is an interesting bit of timing. And I hear where you're coming from, honestly, as far as we spend all of our time adapting to the sighted world, and sometimes we just get sick of doing that. It's something that we all struggle with. You know, why shouldn't we have this perk? Look at all that we have to put up with. I guess I just want to be in a place where the first thought that crosses someone's mind when they see me is not special treatment or not what nice thing can we do because of her blindness. I'd rather just be lost in the crowd, you know?
I can understand that, but relating back to an earlier story, there are people coming new to blindness who may really need that because they might not have the skills that you've built up over time, or they might be agoraphobic when it comes to mobility and they're just paralyzed, and any helping hand would make their lives easier. And so I used to be, when I was a high partial, one of those, "Hey, I'll do it on my own." And then I would promptly walk into that wall I mentioned. So the idea, though, that I got over time, and this, you've heard me mention it on the podcast before, a good ambassador. I want to be a good ambassador and promote all of us independently. But at the same time, I don't necessarily want to take away a service that someone else may be relying upon because it helped them because they didn't have the mobility skills. I mean, I was blindfolded at 6 years old and taught caning. So I can't put my needs in front of somebody else's. So if they give that opportunity, or maybe I can even help that person practice, you know, and I've done that too, where I've had to kind of work with people at the airport. No, this is the proper way for sighted guide, and no, don't grab my cane, you know, and stuff
man.
Like that. So yeah. Sometimes I, again, as a good ambassador, I just want to make sure that maybe I don't need the service, but maybe when somebody does need it, the person who's, you know, administering the service has the proper way of doing it.
Well, you know, maybe if Disney is not so militant about pulling people out of line and you can make the choice to do this if you want, that could be a compromise. And in fact, this last report from Paul Henriksen illustrates that maybe it's not always a case of "you're not magical, come out of this line."
Hi, Sarah Talk people. This is Paul Henriksen. I spent 3 days in December at California Adventures and Disneyland. So this is in regards to your podcast, 155. In that case, it was in your roundabout section. And I stood in a lot of lines with my wife and myself, and I was never pulled out of any lines. I don't know that I would have. I think really that it should be for those who have difficulty standing in lines. But boy, I can tell you, over that 3 days, between California Adventures and Disneyland, I stood in a lot of long lines, and I even had the receiver on my chest that told me where I was in the park with my earbuds in. So never at any time was I pulled out of line. Thanks.
So there you go. He was not pulled out of line at all, and I bet your feet were very tired at the end of all that, but yeah. Great that you had fun.
And it was California, and the stories that we had from last week were Florida, Disney World. So maybe it's more one policy at one location and not another. I'm not sure.
That's possible. Yeah.
I would imagine access is a little different too at Euro Disney, because there are whole different rules that apply there. If anybody's
right.
ever been to Euro Disney and could tell us if, you know, Braille exists, or if there are wide corridors, or if the same devices that Mike Calvo demonstrated, because you heard that mentioned by Paul, the audio devices.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd love to know if that's available in Euro Disney. So our UK listeners or European listeners, let us know if that actually is at Euro Disney. Have you ever gone to Euro Disney is probably a bigger question. But and we got an email from Mike Arrigo. He wrote in about, I had made a mention about Samsung Galaxy S4 was going to be open and the bootloader unlocked. And he made a point that most Samsung phones outside of Verizon are available and open and super easy to modify. He mentioned that he has a podcast over at the Blind Geek Zone up about doing customized ROMs, which is good because that's something that I've been interested in, but I've never really had a reason to throw Cyanogen Mod on anything because now that I'm at Jelly Bean, I've not really needed anything. But the resource is out there and available. And remember that Verizon is one of those that charges extra for some of that, either to get a world phone or to get an unlocked phone. The Samsung Galaxy 4 that has stock Android goes on sale next month for T-Mobile and AT&T. And remember, that's going to be like a Nexus phone in that it's going to get updates as they come out. So you're not going to have to worry about TouchWiz accessibility or anything like that. And we talk a lot about that on the upcoming That Android Show.
Well, if something you've heard on this podcast gets your wheels spinning, sit down and compose an email. Address it to resources@sarahtalk.com. Hit that send button and it will wing its way to us. We'll take a look at it and we just may use it on this very podcast. Or you could leave an audio post known as an iReport using your Android device or your iPhone. And we certainly play iReports as you have just heard. So we, again, would love to hear from you. Go to sarahtalk.com, check out the show notes, and while you're there, leave a blog comment because we use those as well. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/sarahtalk. That will give you a pretty good idea of what's going to be on the upcoming podcast because generally what you see in that Twitter feed is what we talk about, although certainly we tweet some things that we don't cover. There's no way to cover everything, but again, you have a pretty good idea. So definitely check out all of those resources, and we would love to hear from you. It's time now for Roundabout. One of the things that high school students do all the time, several times a day, is to run to their locker and get stuff out and put stuff back. For Nick Torrance, that wasn't such an easy thing to do because he had muscular dystrophy. His occupational therapist approached the robotics teacher and said, "Hey, can the students maybe work on this?" And they did. They just kind of whipped up a robot that will open his locker for him. This is the coolest thing ever because, once again, it does something that our CEO, Mr. Mike Calvo, likes to talk about so much, and that is community spirit and just if we really work together, the things we can accomplish. To me, this is, you know, it's his buddies. It's his friends. It's like, hey, yeah, we can fix that. Yeah, no problem.
I like that there's a course on robotics at the high school. That's kind of what
I
was thinking.
My high school was like, here, you got band and you got choir and that's pretty much what you do.
Robotics in high school. That is, you know, I'm thinking now that, you know, standing on a box and holding a Van de Graaff generator was cool, but man, robotics, dude.
This is awesome. And I love, like you said, Jamie, that they are doing this for their friends and they're, you know, they're bringing actually something that is useful to this person rather than you could just as easily say, hey, I'm a self-centered teen and I want to build a robot to smash things for entertainment purposes. You could totally do that, but you know, it doesn't improve anything necessarily.
There were 3,800 people in my high school. If I could have taught this thing to go get my lunch while I sat at a table and brought it back, that would be really useful because there were a lot of crowds, you know, you can imagine in a big Texas high school with that many people. You're right. Absolutely. Technology and especially people who are younger tend to think outside the box. And so all of that community, technology, and freaking robots, dude, that's awesome.
Well, you can hire it out. Hey, man, for $2, this robot will go get your lunch for you or something. I don't know.
Sweet.
You have to make it.
Yeah.
Until one day,
the entrepreneurial spirit there. Exactly.
Until one day the robot uprising, you know, begins and they take over the school.
And the robot eats your lunch or something.
Yeah, that's it.
Or your homework.
Well, you could just 3D print your lunch and then you'd never run out
NASA's
of possible.
Doing that. NASA's doing 3D pizza.
Yeah, I know, with pizza.
Oh, man, that's so cool. It's like a replicator on the space station. That would be like, you know, tea Earl Grey hot and pepperoni, please.
Yeah, 3D printing is becoming huge. I mean, just in the last 3 months, it's talked about everywhere. And there are so many applications for this. I read an article the other day about someone 3D printing a portion of a trachea I think.
Right.
So that they could go in. Yeah. So they could go and implant that. And
so it could breathe.
You know, it's exactly to scale. One thing that I would never have thought of with 3D printing, but is just amazing, and I wish this had been around 10 years ago, they're 3D printing sonograms so that blind parents can take a look at their babies. This is so cool because there is always the magic of hearing that first heartbeat, you know, because at this point, you don't really feel anything. The baby's not moving or anything, so it can be hard to visualize the fact, yeah, there's something in there. So when you hear the heartbeat, it makes it real. But when you see the sonogram, that's another way that this really becomes, you know, it kind of brings it home to you that, yeah, there's a baby swimming around in there. And here's what it looks like. So now they are 3D printing sonograms for blind parents. So now we don't have to miss out on this part of the experience.
And we have the ability to share baby pictures with everybody, just like everybody else now. So if you go to,
that's right.
You know, if you go to a center for the blind or something like that, you can actually, hey, you want to feel my baby? Which will sound absolutely socially wrong. But gives us the same thing that sighted people do by posting it or hand, you know, hey, let me reach into my wallet or let me show you on my phone. No, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And sonar, sonogram, echolocation, yeah, all of that. Man, there are ways that we are using sound to do amazing things. And, you know, it's not just for bats and dolphins and Jamie anymore. No, everybody's using sound and sonograms in incredible ways. And I know people who have played like games and in like kickball and stuff like that using echolocation. There was one guy I saw years ago, I think it was in Los Angeles, who rode a bike who was totally blind using echolocation. So there are all sorts of things that you can use. I personally, well, I may have gone to see Aerosmith in 1981, and I work in headphones a lot. So I'm not as good as with echolocation, Judas Priest 1986, as some people might be. How about you guys? You rely on echolocation any, or?
I do to some degree. Yeah. It's not a case where I will go around going and listening, you know, for that. But let's say I'm wearing heels or I'm using a cane. As I walk in different places and, you know, on different types of materials, things sound different. And I do pick up information from that. But it's almost in a subconscious way. I never really think, all right, I'm tapping the cane down or I'm going to stomp my foot and see what it sounds like.
Yeah.
How about you, Jamie?
How close the wall is.
Just exactly what you said. I will use footfalls. I will use maybe kind of casually snap my fingers. I'm walking, thinking of a tune.
I've done that, yeah.
And cheating and using that as an echo location device. But I don't do the whole obvious. There was a TV special a year or so back, and I forget what network it was on. It was a young man who used echolocation a lot in his neighborhood, and he was pretty convinced that he didn't need to use a cane, and he had an instructor that really worked with him and finally got him out of his comfort zone, and he found out really quickly that he wasn't quite as comfortable as he thought he was.
Let me take you and move you to another part of the city that you don't have memorized, and let's try that again.
Pretty much.
Well, and this brings up a debate that I've had with people, especially mobility instructors when I was in vocational rehabilitation, about who likes roller tips versus traditional mushroom or straight edge and, you know, flexible cane versus, you know, non-folding cane. How much information do you get from a rigid cane versus a flexible cane? How much information do you get from echolocation from tapping versus feeling the ground in front of you with a roller tip? This is our version of automatic versus standard transmission for sighted people. It really is. And there are some people who are just ultimately passionate because they grew up using echolocation and they do it just the way you guys talked about. And then there are people, and I've seen this, and this is just anecdotal, so don't think this is an overarching statement, but sometimes partials who lose vision tend to like using roller tips more because they feel the ground in front of them, and that gives them a little bit more of a safer thing, especially if they're relying on their vision partially rather than learning it under blindfold. So do you guys have preferences? Have you experimented with other tips, and did that affect your echolocation?
My favorite cane of all time was a rigid cane that I'm pretty sure was fiberglass, if I remember, but it's the convenience of the folding cane. I can't imagine going to a restaurant and only using a rigid cane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a drag.
When I was a cane user, I used a folding cane as well with a roller tip. And I'm always surprised, and I don't really know why, but my cane technique is fluid, moving the cane back and forth, and it never really leaves the ground that often. So that's kind of what I do. And then when I go to convention, I hear the tap, tap, tap of the cane, and I never hear so much of the sliding cane. So who knows? Maybe I'm a bad cane user and maybe not, but I just I prefer having it kind of on the ground most of the time.
Well, you're a service animal user. Do you carry a cane as a backup just in case? A folding?
I do. It depends. I don't always carry one. It depends on where I'm going and how long I think I'm going to be gone and if I'm with somebody else. Usually if I'm with somebody else and I have my service animal, I don't carry the cane as a backup. But if I am going by myself, and certainly if I'm going to be traveling for several days, I will always bring the cane because you never know, the dog can get sick and need to be in the hotel room for a bit, or hey, maybe I want to go down to the pool and I don't want the dog to have to lay around beside the pool and not be able to jump in. So yeah.
I've had too many friends with sports cars, so I stopped using rigid canes because I'm 6'1". So that doesn't always work.
That's a long cane.
Yeah, it doesn't work out for you very often. And so I've gotten used to foldings, and I used to actually be very much a 6-piece. Now I'm kind of more of a 4-piece kind of guy, but and I use Ambutech products a lot. Those are the canes that I've kind of sort of gravitated to, and I don't use a roller tip. And it's because I trained under blindfold in the small city streets of a Texas town so long ago that I'm used to using straight tips, even though, Jamie, you'll understand this part, even though you might get it caught and then end up giving yourself an appendectomy with your cane.
Yes, that can happen to us all, actually, in various ways.
Developing that hand slides more to the right instead of being centered move, you know?
Yes.
I understand it should be in the center. I just also understand I don't need to see what I had for lunch. I'm good. I appreciate that.
Right.
Now I think we all kind of sort of drift and develop our own style of cane. I know the open palm technique, when I was at Chris Cole, one of the instructors there loved open palm, and I could just never get it. And when he said, all right, let me see your style.
How do you know what that is?
Well, so you put it between your finger and your thumb in the crook of your hand, and you kind of let it rotate back and forth. And I'm not doing this justice. Someone's going to give us an eye report and say, Joe, you explained it wrong. Great. Write in or tell us that
us
better.
Here,
especially you guys at Chris Cole, who are laughing at me right now. But I when I demonstrated my technique, which was the old pencil grip, index finger down the side of the cane. I mean, this is the old 70s style, you know?
Oh, that's what I do.
Death grip kind of thing.
Too.
And so I was told that I was an old fogey, and that I wasn't with the new hip way of using a cane. I said I didn't know there were styles. And do we wear certain colors after Labor Day? Wait, I missed this. You know, but there's some stories for you guys. Let us know what you think about echolocation technique, cane technique, any of the stories that we talked about today.
And once again, Patrick will tell you how to get a hold of us at the end of the podcast. We really appreciate you listening. We always appreciate your comments and your feedback. And we are going to certainly have more to talk about next week, because you just never know what's going to pop up in the news in the next few days. We trust that all of you have had a great holiday weekend and that you're ready to get back to work and put the nose to the grindstone. So
go play around in summer. Summer, summer, summer.
There you go. It's coming up on us very quickly, as well as convention season's coming up. It's kind of just around the corner. We're going to be at NFB, ACB, and who knows where else. You just want to just kind of keep your ears open, because we're liable to be anywhere. Well, until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.